to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, hello, 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 good evening good evening to New Yorkers and East Coast, good afternoon, even, oh well, here we are, which one goes on the left or the right, just trying to put my headphones on, do I need them? No, I don't need headphones, right, okay, so no headphones yet, until I get a guest, so that's okay, which hopefully won't be long. I'm again open today. You can ask me any question. I've been listening to loads of people, so I've probably got some answers, and I might have some answers of my own. If you've got any quandaries, queries, questions, quizzes, yeah, try me. Yeah, do you want me to guess your personality trait? Well, not to guess them, just to read them. You know, it's like quite obvious. Anyway. I'm completely open to the universe. I'm open to angels calling in. I'm open to, you know, extraterrestrials calling in and saying, hello, I've come to eat your face. You know, and might we have a conversation about that, but, you know, I've spoken to a stranger. Anyway, yeah, so what's the week? It's been, you know, the week. Jeez. I mean, so many things go on in a week like this. Let me just check the chat room there, and hello to everybody in the Rev chat room, hello, and hello to everybody in the Wolf Spirit chat room as well. Where are you all? There you are on the other screen. Oh yeah, something's happened to that. Let me just reload that. I've had some very strange disconnections. It's supposed to be working in. Oh, there's a chat room. It's coming back. It's coming. I think Chat and Go crashed. We managed to crash our server yesterday. That was quite fun. Anyway, yes, there you are. Yes, indeed, I am live. I am live, yes. Indeed. It is hard to converse politely when someone's eating your face, but, you know, you do what you can. You do what you can, don't you? Anyway, I would love... Ah, where's tab 2? Oh, what's happened there? I don't know if I've lost the situation here. All right. Well, as I said, you can call in. I've got a telephone number in America. It's 775-773-3431. 775-773-3431. You can call into Studio B, which is 310-421-4053. I could give you loads more numbers, but then the numbers will just ring around your head. There's two you can try. That should get into me. I have an abscess on my left tooth, lower left, and that's why I'm speaking in a rather strange way. So... we'll wait for that to go down. I don't know where that came from. What would that be? That would be lots of sugar. Things get inflamed. I you know, I really notice things now that I've been not eating things, you know, that I used to eat, like sugar and flour and bread and all that stuff. And that when I do, stuff happens and it hurts. Oh, and I'm getting terrible internet here. I don't know what's going on. Well, it would be nice. It would be nice for things to settle down. Right, okay, now there's Wolf Spirit. Okay, over here. Are we getting through? Yes, indeed. So, if you'd like to call in, you know how to do it. Please, call in. I like to talk to new people as well, people who I've not spoken to before, who have been listening and have an idea of what I'm talking about, so that I may continue on a more personal level. It's right. So where was I? Skype issues, you know, the usual Skype issues. The usual slight disconnections every so often, so we'll see what happens then. Where was I? Noticing that when I eat sugar at certain times, I get inflammation. Things hurt. It's exactly excessive nung, says Six Sigma. That's hard to say with a funny tooth. Yes, indeed. Sorry, this thing has really given me some chip today. Okay. Like ex-smokers. Yes, indeed. You get to notice what it was that was doing you so much harm that you didn't notice, because the harm that was doing was in, like, being able to notice that you were being harmed. Did that make sense? I'll say that again. You don't notice that you're being harmed because, like one of those blood-sucking leech things that pumps anesthetic into the body, into the area around it, so you can't feel it sucking your blood. Like the midge does that. You only know it only hurts after the midge's left. That's when the poison starts to work. But the midge has been sucking away quite happily for hours before then. And it's only when it leaves you that you can feel it again. And by then it's too late, and it's already started to swell. AR-15? What's an AR-15? Yeah. Yeah, they were staring to want me to contact them, yes. So, yes. Especially if you've got any nung stories, www.thenung.com. Yeah, I registered it, and it got quite fun. Karen Kirschbaum has already published a story in there. That's really good. We've also got a few people have promised me some articles, and I'll try and bring some more. Yes. Well, anyway. Well, yes. Okay. You're all arguing about... In Wolf Spirit, they're saying how not stupid everybody is. Yeah, well, everybody can be clever and stupid all at the same time, can't you? Can't you do that sort of stuff? You know, isn't it possible to be an utter genius and still know how to tie your shoelaces properly? You know, everybody's got their own area of expertise and areas where they're you know, the opposite of expertise. Yeah, I'm getting these weird disconnections from this. I wonder if that's gonna, if it's actually working properly. Alright, let's try that. Let's try and cancel that. Okay, in Wall Street Radio, tell me if you've got that. Yeah, long-standing indecisiveness. Oh. I wonder what I should be indecisive. Lyra in Wolf Spirit is saying dental problems can translate as long-standing indecisiveness. Well, yeah. Better excessive nung than excessive junging. What's junging, Stardust Man? So yeah, do call in. I'd love to have a chat with somebody. Next week is I'm going to have a guest. So you can call in today and talk to me, because next week I'm going to have a guest. This guest is another JP. Indeed, I don't know if you've heard of him. He's JP Sears. Ah, yes, Sunshine Jim. There you go. Evening, SA.
Well, hey, JP, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Pretty good. Do I need to turn down my speakers at all?
No, it's all right. I turned mine. That was why they got.
You know, I was thinking the other day, I sure do miss Wolf Spirit Dave.
Well, you know what's really weird is that we don't really miss Dave because he's still with us.
I sometimes feel like, you know, he's egging me on.
Yeah, no, I'm not kidding. In a very real way.
Every once in a while, I'll say something and I can hear him laugh off in the distance, you know what I mean?
But yeah, no, really, SJ, in a really real way, Dave is still with us. A lot of the hosts on the show, on the station, are mediums.
I would say so. Absolutely. How could you not be?
And very talented mediums.
That's for sure.
There's one particular lady, Dolly Howard. I think you're listening, Dolly. You can call her if you like.
Sure. Who ladies on the show?
Who actually, you know. We're not kidding. Dave speaks through her. She doesn't do the voice. He speaks to her, and she perceives him and relates what he's saying. And
isn't that interesting?
Does a regular show. Dave speaks. You know, it's no kidding.
Oh, I dig it. I didn't know.
Yeah,
this is news to me. I think it's delightful, personally.
Well,
Do you mind if I ask another Dave-related question?
Well, let me just finish because.
Yeah, go ahead.
When Dave passed across, let's say, when he laid down his body, a week went by or so, and I had a journeys program, much like I do on a Monday, and I had this lady who was a medium, and she was going to be doing channeling the Pleiadian dimensional collective thing, and I thought, yeah, a bit of peas, I do like a bit of peas, so we were all booked up, and then when she actually came on the show, and she didn't know anybody in the station, she said, all week I've been kind of bugged by this guy. I know I was supposed to be doing the peas, but all week I've been kind of being bugged by this guy. Do you know someone called Dave?
And Dave's not here.
and I know what's coming. You know, I can feel it building up. And I'm like, oh my God. All right. So, for the next 2 hours, and it's in the record, in the archives, she speaks, and she uses phraseology that Dave used. You know, she didn't know him, but she was just using his words, you know, the way he spoke.
Roger that.
So, since then, he's been appearing to various people, Muggsy and others. And, you know, if you need a mentor, if you need to have a conversation that you can't have with somebody in a body, Dave will make himself available. You'd call on him. You know, and you can have a conversation with a wise old Indian chief, who he really was.
So,
yeah.
Could I ask my question?
Indeed.
I'll tell you, one of the things I loved about Dave was his dogs and his wolf and his wolf dogs. And I loved them all. And we frequently talked about them and laughed. We both enjoyed how incredibly unique they were. So what happened to Dave's dogs?
They all got found homes. They didn't all get, you know, none of them get put down. They were old. A lot of them were old. They were kind of ex-puppies
from way back. Right?
Well, you know, not ex-puppies, but I mean, they were ex, you know, of some sort of abusive situation. And we talked about that.
Right.
So,
Roger. Bad childhoods.
Yeah. And so they came, it was a sort of retirement home for veterans, really. You know. And, that's
we've got a group of people up here that do that.
Why, very nice.
Go ahead, though.
I thought JP was going to say wise old geezer. Yeah, he's a wise old geezer. He is indeed. So yeah, they all went to appropriate and good homes. It was all handled by his family, really, who didn't really care very much about Dave's radio life. They didn't care that he was a famous person in this realm. It was a completely other, you know, it was just like Dave's weird old hobby.
Amateur radio.
Yeah, that sort of thing, yeah. That was what it was to us. They didn't realize that, you know, thousands of people knew who he was because they'd seen him on TV, and these people were particularly focused people as well, so people remember who people are.
And also there's this, you got to remember, growing up, I was as old, or Dave was similar to my age, right? We were both, you know, teenagers during the Vietnam War. And amongst other things, the people that were our parents, our families, were different. They had different teenage years than we had, a lot of them during the middle of the 1930s depression. So those families were slow to get modern. It was convenient, it was comfortable for them to, you know, have a comfortable mindset, and, you know, they might have their own version of a hobby, but it was always considered a hobby, nothing serious, right? And Dave was serious. He had a great mind. I've got a conversation I had with him that I recorded because it was so much fun. Maybe one of these days we'll replay that on Wolfsburg or something, you know? Yeah, well, it's probably in the archives.
It's in the archives, no doubt. You know, yeah, everything's there.
Yeah, you got a good set of archives, right?
It's pristine, from the dot.
Excellent.
You know, nothing got taken down because we've never relied on anybody but our own, you know, our own hired servers. And as soon as anything got lost, you know, as soon as we lost any form of control from one, we'd go for another one. As soon as GoDaddy got hacked. You remember GoDaddy got hacked a few years back?
Yeah.
Dumped him. You know, it was like, Dave's really like that. That's the first rate, you know. Okay. One.
Yeah, he was always, you know, I enjoyed him because I got into Linux and immediately for reliability, really, issues. Windows 98 wasn't that reliable back then, and it certainly wasn't easy to back up using its own built-in backups, right? Although some people have argued with me about it. But I was into security. Dave was into security. We were worried about everybody else's secrets being unprotected, you know, and their truth being unprotected. You know, a lot of us have archives that when the government says one thing, we go back to our archives and we go, well, I got proof that what you're saying is, you know, BS. I mean, I can give you a chapter and verse, right? And being able to keep that intact and use it is at least as handy as having, you know, it archived in a major protected library. It's something that you can go back to and go, well, you're saying this, but the record is this is what happened, you know, and who it happened to. Now, I'll tell you. So Dave was always, he was always somebody who'd been out there. I'd been out there. We recognized each other as being sort of in that hunter-gatherer mold, you know. We liked adventure. We did a whole bunch of things because we thought it would be cool to do it, even though it turned out to be incredibly dangerous while we were doing it. But on the other hand, it kept us alive. It kept us vital, you know. So that's what I liked about having Dave for a good friend.
He was a great bloke. And, well, you know,
well, he is a good bloke. Let's give him the ability to be here on...
Well, he's not a bloke anymore. He's no longer a bloke. He's bigger than bloke.
Yeah, he's a form of energy that's really cool.
Yeah. And talking of forms of energy, Wild Feather, hello.
Hi, JP. How you doing?
Greetings. How are you? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from New Hampshire.
Well,
I've been basically got drawn in by listening to Andronicus with Jessica.
All right, drawn in, sucked into the vortex.
Yeah, I actually caught up on YouTube by doing like binging while I was sitting here spinning. I spin wool, so I sit and listen to things while I'm doing that. So that drew me in. So I do have a question for you.
Please go ahead.
Didn't you? You said something on one show somewhere about black helicopters. Was that you?
Oh yeah. I was talking with somebody who was helping people with abductee, my lab, contact situations, and came to the realization what the reason of the black helicopters was.
Because I had a strange encounter, probably close to 20 years ago now. I live in a small valley near a small airport, kind of in between two major, bases.
And, air bases.
Air bases, you know, right. Ways away, but,
yeah.
You know.
Quite like here, I live near two air bases, yeah.
Yeah. And but about 20 years ago or so, I was out walking with my dog, and this helicopter flew over. I didn't think much of it where I was walking, and then it came back, went over me again. And at the time, I was heading up towards my grandparents' farm, and the big old barn, 200 feet long, and I'm like, I'm going to go kind of hide, you know, there, because this is really weird. The thing's following me. And, you know, my dog was sticking to me like glue right at my ankles. And so I went behind the barn, and I'm like, it's not going to follow me around the barn, you know. But I kept on walking, and I come around the other side of the barn where the path met the road again. And I could see them in the helicopter. They were right above me. And it was almost like they came out of nowhere. And I just remember being really angry and, like, kind of took all my energy. I was like, leave me alone. And it was like they went up in the sky and was like they were gone. It's like the noise of the helicopter didn't even exist. It's like, you know, usually normal helicopter, you would hear an echo out of the valley. But this went up like high and was gone. And it was I've told people about it. They thought I was, you know, oh, well, they must have had a reason. And I'm like, no. I said they were definitely targeting me for some reason. So any comments, suggestions?
All right. So from what I understand, and I'm... I don't believe that I have direct contact, but I have spoken to people and, like, figured the whole, you know, the idea out. But what it seems to be is that people get taken by their soul family, their star family, and they taken for a ride, and they, you know, experience maybe a dream or something like that. And then what then happens is that the helicopters and the planes are scanning the area looking for energetic anomalies. So they've got scalar detectors, they've got oscilloscopes, all sorts of equipment, radar, LIDAR, you know, all kinds of equipment for scanning frequencies. And probably for you, you have an anomaly of emission. People said that you emanate.
Yeah, that wouldn't shock, you know, wouldn't be surprising. I am. I can speak. You know, I, what you call it, clairsentience. I can understand animals, what they're saying, through emotion, or however I can usually know what people are thinking if I'm in the same room with them.
Do you know what a Merkaba is?
Yes, I do.
Do you use a Merkaba?
Not consciously.
Have you ever used a Merkaba? Do you? Or no, here's the thing.
Well, I read Melchizedek, that book.
All right, so look.
So I do understand.
You might have done some of the exercises which have opened up this thing.
Okay.
Apparently, according to other, you know, I don't know this, but, you know, I'm just throwing this about things that I've heard, right? can't be completely taken on, but you know, this might be a clue as to what might be what might help. So
I have something I'd like to
yeah
add
can
in,
I just finish please and then I'll let you yeah okay I'll hear you. But so the idea is that people who have opened up Merkaba, the energy can show up on their radar, whatever they use. And that what's important is that you shield it first. If you're going to do it, create a shield around you so it can't be seen. You can ask for it. Just say, you know, this. I want this to be not, you know, not visible to anyone seeing who might not have my best interest at heart. Then you start your Merkaba up. So it may be that you've been kind of broadcasting an anomaly signal that they've been picked up on, and that's why you'll get the TR-3Bs disguising themselves as helicopters, because there's a similarity in the energies that you use. I mean, basically a Merkaba is a spaceship. You know,
right.
It's the same thing. Use the same part of your mind to drive the Merkaba as you do a real spaceship.
Well, that would make sense because I've really been on a...
Actually, I don't know that. I just said that and it sounded right, but I don't know. But
it makes sense to me because I kind of feel like I would have been the one that's born with the eyes wide open. I'm waiting for, you know, always been aware of energies. From as long as I can remember, and so that makes sense to me. And I really started a spiritual journey when I was in my 20s, and I'm in my early 50s now. So, you know, this was probably at the time where I was starting a spiritual journey. I was starting to get into, you know, the Melchizedek books and other David Icke and different books like that that were coming out in that, at that time frame. So, and dreams that I had that were about spiritual awakening, so that makes sense to me. Thank you, JP.
Good. Okay, so SJ, you had a related.
Yes, I do. I have several. Hello, Feather. We've never met before. You don't know me, but I have a show on Revolution Radio. On Wednesday nights, you're always welcome to talk in. It's a round table. Now, in relation to black helicopters, I thought I'd add a few comments based on my lifetime interest in aeronautics. One of the reasons for the black coatings, not all, but some, maybe even a high proportion, I don't know, because we don't have common access to those kinds of numbers, but that black coating itself, in many cases, is an experiment with reflective light modifying coatings. Now, moving past that to your mind in that helicopter for a long time, since the 1970s. We've known that it was possible to have mental interactions with certain kinds of extrasolar objects that we have recovered. David Dare had a wonderful show with Art Bell discussing touching a power pod that was sentient. In other words, it had a mind. It understood that he had a mind and it was responding. So we've been experimenting with that kind of interaction between the mind and machines since the 1970s. Now, you might have the kind of mind that attracts the interest of a helicopter's mind, a black copter's control awareness. Because when you get into that kind of an interaction between a conscious machine and a human, which is what they were doing with the interactions between the pilot and the fighter jets when they needed those instantaneous reactions for air combat, for example. But it's moved on, I betcha, to the point where somebody with a strong mind could affect a vehicle like that. It would be a very unusual mind. Maybe that's one of the reasons why that thing was haunting your steps. Over.
Yeah, I've always had that unusual mind that goes or always seen things differently.
I have I'm one always, of my own that I've been joined with.
I kind of have a airplane background from my father because he was an airplane buff and been around small planes all my life. So
me too. Well, I'll tell you.
And had known the difference, because I had grown up with it, and just this was so different. And there was I've seen too with planes that blend so well with the sky that you can't tell if they're there or not. It's
Having that attitude, that awareness might be a major component of this anomalous, in terms of other people, mind that you have. Because in order for my theory, and this is all theoretical, I'm just saying, hey, wouldn't it be cool if? But maybe it's your lack of fear, your familiarity with the concept of flight that might contribute to this unique point of, this unique state of mind, this unique mind that you have that could possibly, and this is all theoretical again, affect a sentient, high-tech version of a helicopter using that kind of mind to control or mind to interface with that semi-sentient or sentient machine. Isn't that a hoot? Over.
That is
science fiction. I mean, life is science fiction, right?
Oh, exactly. And I definitely, because of my father's interest, I was exposed to that at a very young age because he always, loved science.
Well, that might have been all it took, that early exposure. And I'm sort of barging in on JP's show. Pardon me, JP. I didn't mean to. But this idea is so fascinating. I've been thinking about the interface between reality, science fiction, reality, how we change, how it has changed us, how we change it. And it seems like, we're developing a deeper inner relationship with possibility. So I'm just having fun, encouraging this possibility. Who knows? Feather, maybe you could get better at it.
Well, it's been said, and other people said, we create our own reality. And
right. Well, families with histories of psychokinetic abilities exist.
Yep. And one of my father's favorite sayings was that all we have to do is imagine it, and it becomes reality.
That's true, too. On a lot of other people besides your family have thought that as a possibility, right? And it seems to have evidence. Over.
Yes, true. Like, he loved reading, like, Jules Verne. And so, and he was like, in his lifetime, he saw, like, he would read books like that when he was a kid. And then in his lifetime, he saw all these things come true.
Did you know that the Greeks had their own form, or Egyptians had their own form of science fiction? They told stories about wild, incredible, some of them related to phenomena like light and other things to each other. The Egyptians had a form of fiction. Isn't that a hoot?
Yeah, cool. Listen, we got a caller. Let's not exclude them. Erico 870. Who's that?
Yeah.
Who's that?
Probably most people know me as Stardust Man. My name is Daryl.
Hey, Star, how are you?
Stardust Man.
Yeah.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah. Yeah, SJ. SJ and I, we, before SJ ever had a show, we You know, I sent him a PM to give him that number, and we talked for like 3 hours on the phone, you know.
Oh, it was fun.
So, yeah, it was fun. Anyway, what I was wanting to say is, toward the beginning of the show, I was typing in chat, and you know, everybody knows I can't spell, you know. And I couldn't think of the proper way to spell it, and I put a link in there a little bit ago. Jin, J-I-N, you know. And it kind of brings up a little bit what was recently talked about manifesting and all this stuff. But you know, it's kind of like a very, very dark thing that is like.
You know a jinn. A jinn is a genie. Same thing. The genie in the bottle, yes. Jinn in the bottle. Same thing.
Yep.
Bottle of gin, dark spirit, mother's ruin. Long story.
Well, no. What I'm talking about is.
Yeah, I know. D-J-I-N-N. Yeah. I'm playing around here with the phoneme.
Or gin and soda.
Okay.
Exactly.
But anyway, it's like something that's not talked about. It's like, like there was a movie not too long ago that was made, you know. And it was like somebody possessed with a djinn and it's like a monk that went in there and into a room where I locked up and he had to deal with it and all that. And I can't remember what the rest of the movie was. But anyway, it's like a subject that is not talked about. It's almost like if you talk about it, you wake it up and you bring it around, you know. It's kind of like, you know, a spooky world, you know.
Don't mention the Archons.
Yeah, and I, you don't hear anyone talking about that, you know what I mean?
Well, I talk about it. I talk about Archons all the time.
What about Jin?
Would you like me to make a comment about him?
If you like.
Well, what happens is you go start looking at the idea of Archons, a spirit that sucks up negative energy. And it turns out that every culture has a history, a tradition of discussing beings like that. Not always by the same name. Not always definitely not in the same languages, but they have a historical perspective on these beings that eat your soul. Or basically survive by imbibing or absorbing or using negative energy. And all of them say the best way to get to deal with this situation is to discipline your mind to think, to surrender the negativity of thinking and embrace the more positive aspects of life around you. You know, be here now is one sort of an approach to that in the 60s. And what I was talking about with Feather, the mind actually affecting reality, that seems to be one of the essential aspects of this that we need to get better at. I figured the 21st century, the challenge of the 21st century is how to really get on top of our humanity and our ability to think. To focus, to feel things like empathy. So that's my opinion. Thank you for letting me sit. Over.
Well, the djinn. We speak about the djinn on Wolf Spirit Radio a lot.
Oh, sure. That's a major part of a lot of cultures, right?
So for djinn news, come to Wolf Spirit Radio, because we deal with the spirits, you know, it's all about the spirits. So, and the djinn, there are, like, well, many people have got very different ideas about who they were, or who they are, and where they come from. One idea, and this is a great one, I love this one, this is my favorite crazy idea, is that they are the spirits of previous ancient generations of super soldiers who were killed in battle. And we're just looking for somewhere to hang out, to embody and stuff like that. But there's other people who say that they're a completely different race, a totally four-dimensional race, and then they're natural to the Earth. They're like part of the Earth kind of consciousness stream, but that humanity have hurt them so much and traumatized them that they have kind of hidden themselves in a pocket of hyperdimensional reality, which is why you don't see them. They've kind of hid themselves, but they've been basically repelled by humanity, who basically tortured them. We torture everything. We abuse the crap out of just about every part of our planet, including its consciousness.
That's part of what I've always understood is, like, they have been here far longer on this, I mean, now, like, in Earth, but I mean, from what I've come to understand is they've been here, like, far longer than any other being. Been here and watched them come and all this, and they've been here, like, forever, you know.
They were the, some theories are that they were the first form of awareness and preceded carbon-based life, basically. They're a different based form of life, at least according to one theory I heard. Quite interesting too, eh? Over.
So, the thing go ahead.
The one thing, something I've been reading, I don't know how many shows I've been listening to and people talked about, unfortunately, I'm on my weekend right now, and normally this time of night I'm working, you know, and I cannot call. And at one time, you know, I'll listen in, you know, or when I record it, and when I come home, I'll listen to it, you know, the recording, because I don't have the patience to wait until it gets downloaded on the archives. But anyway, something that, you know, I've heard talked over and over and over is how it'll be like, oh, I don't know how to explain it, be like in a mental state, you know, and they just sit in their way and they actually, the way, you know, I mean, people eat food and all this stuff, the way they eat is they live off of people's fear and anger. All those feelings that you get, that like when you're so scared, you feel like the hair raises up on your back, or if you're really anger and that's an energy you put out. I mean, it's like, maybe if you're an angry person, you probably should shave your hair, because I think your hair works like an antenna, sending those signals out. But anyway, it's like they live off that energy, you know? Over.
Well, now they, like everybody else, realized that they were getting too fat. So instead of full-on, hardcore, veins-in-your-teeth hate, what all they've got now is fear light, which is basically insecurity, you know, being nervous. See, even they got, even those guys, even the spirits are having cutbacks. That's my theory.
So, the djinn. The djinn. Many people have got different ideas about them, and one of the things is, you know, your classic trapped genie in the bottle thing is, it's not quite the bottle, but it's the iron ring, and the magician's iron ring, the sorcerer's iron ring, is the thing that they use to control them. Because they're a higher dimensional, they're fourth dimensional, they're more electric than physical. So they can be caught in an iron ring. And they don't like it. Really, it distresses them greatly. But it's like you know, the thing that you can do to a chicken to hypnotize a chicken. The chicken can't do anything about it, and it's prone to it. And this is again like the genies. So it's a cruelty to do it to them. Jim?
JP, I have never heard of the iron ring thing before. I mean, is it iron? I mean, is it magnetized or what?
No, just basic raw iron or cast iron or something like that. If you want to put, apparently, now, the expert on the gin is Simon Parks, actually, because he says he was King Solomon in the days gone by. And who am I to argue? So, so he knows a lot about the gin, because those 72 names, they weren't the names of God. Idiots. They're the names of spirits, you know. And they've all got this combination of several letters. And, you know. Anyway, those 72 names that he could invoke to do a particular thing, and they were all spirits that he'd kind of done a treaty with in some ways. You know, they got what they want, he got what he wants. But after that, they didn't like it so much. They, because humans tried to control them. You know, King Solomon had a sort of respect for them, but other humans just tried to control them and use them, and they got more and more resentful. So, and then there's a kind of the whole thing about what's that place? The Kaaba. You know, the cube, the Kaaba, Cuba, yeah, in Mecca, the Mecca Kaaba or the Mecca.
Sure. Have to it.
Yeah,
I've been thinking about it for decades.
Counter rotation, full of bottles of genies, of gins.
Theoretically, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what they believe, however.
Well.
And belief's strong, you know. What if you believe something, does it exist?
If something...
You know, it's Schrodinger's box, only it's the Mecca version of it.
Well, no, because, you know, people have done... shamanic journeys, again, you know, people connected with Little Spirit Radio have done journeys into this thing, discovered that there were trapped jinn, and released them.
Oh, baby.
That was shortly before this whole business with the crane, by the way.
I see.
I got a question. So, are they like the fae? The fae or the elemental? The jinn,
well, it's one way of, one mythos. One way of describing them, sure. You know, in every culture, like I was saying, there's a story, a mythos about them. And their effect as well. Lots of very interesting observations by shamans. At least that's my point of view. I hope you don't mind.
Yeah, well, this is, you know, we're putting forward... the idea, a very ancient idea, the idea that a lot of people have had, is that there are other beings than us on this planet who might have a say in how the planet is going, you know. In fact, there may have been already treaties made with lots of them, you know, that some groups have ignored those treaties, because it happens, doesn't it?
Well, there's also theoretical in terms of physics. You're talking about possible beings that can phase shift, go from an alternate reality to ours because we're fairly close together. That's the theory, that of all these possible infinite varieties of universes that exist with every new idea, literally, you know, then there's a possibility that some are so close that it's possible to merge occasionally. Now, this is not saying that some of these realities, these phased universes, aren't significantly different from ours. They might have completely different physics in terms of the laws of physics, right? We're starting to learn that things like light and gravity both aren't the constants that we thought they were, for example. So the possibility of another universe being so significantly different from ours that there's no possibility of us even being able to comprehend it is also a possibility. I love being able to think about unlimited realities existing in a universe of universes. and us in the middle of it. Over.
You know, there's something, when you talk about phase shifting, I can't remember where I came about this. It probably came from one of the really old, Terry Cassidy, you know, Project Camelot. I mean, I listened to her before the station even existed, you know. And, I can't remember where I heard this, but it, you know, when you hear something and you get this gut feeling that it's wrong or right, and for some reason I just got this gut feeling is really right. And when it comes to phase shifting and they talk about ascension and all the different religions, you know, they kind of correspond with each other and talk about that type of stuff. Like, you know, like in the Bible, they talk about, you know, people ascending up and all of a sudden, you know, people down below know, you know, people are missing, you know. But, kind of what I kind of wonder is, you know, like, we hear all these past shows talking about, there's, other, you know, the word we call them aliens, but I don't want to call them aliens. I want to say entities from somewhere else. And there's a lot of them that are, from what I understand and hearing a lot of stuff, they're just like there. You can't see them, but there's something that is so great that's fixing to happen. They're just watching history unfold. A great event fixing to happen. And I'm just kind of wondering if that great event is actually this Earth. Everyone on the planet and the planet itself is fixing to phase shift, ascend. And like, you've seen these little stories before about, like, you know, they show on this, I can't remember the, anyway, it was a picture that looked like a cliff or something, and then on top of the cliff, you know, there's nothing there, but for a second, the, buildings appeared, you know, and then disappeared, you know, which was a different dimension, same place here now, but a different dimension that just phased in and out for a second. And that's my explanation about our ascending is we're fixing to do a phase shift in the people and the Earth itself that are ready to ascend to the next level will phase shift up to the next level. And if you were like way out in space and you were looking, it would look like, you know, you see in the movies where a person dies and like a ghostly shadow of the person lifts up and gets out of the body. Kind of like that, you know, like those two worlds will like separate. And the ones that are ascending and the Earth that they're on will phase shift away. And then the other one, think of it as like reincarnation. We can't learn. I mean, like, you're here to learn, and if you don't learn, you redo over again. And like the other Earth phase shifting out would be the reincarnation of the Earth and people on it needing to do a redo, you know?
Oh, yeah. Over. JP, I certainly have some comments, but would you like to comment on that first?
Well, yeah, because I think you're getting somewhere there. The whole phase shifting, and what does phase shifting mean? It means you're like, it's like starting a beat. You know, you got the 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, and if you start the beat on the second beat, you're out of phase. So you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, and that phase shift creates an energetic ripple, the interference pattern, and that's mm-hmm. what you see when people phase in and out. They kind of wobble about, and then they're gone. And that's the two frequencies. So they're shifting from one frequency. But what does it mean to move frequency? What is the thing that is shifting in frequency? People, any question, any answers to that?
Well, there's tons. You know, theoretical physics is starting to explore all of that. Over.
Further?
I thought, like, I swear Nancy Reagan had already passed away. I think somebody was bringing that up on the chat, but these people already passed. Some people know, but
we having a Mandela effect here.
Yeah, exactly, things like that. Didn't that happen already? Or like a deja vu effect, maybe?
You know, I think deja vu. My feeling about deja vu is that an event happens in space and time in a particular now. And because now happens all at the same time, you know, every now is always now, and we're here in one part of now, we move from one now to another now. And some nows are really big, and they send out ripples backwards and forwards in space and time. And these get picked up in dreams and other etheric realities, and that's what we experience. And what I find is that, or what my theory about is, and I've got loads of weird theories. My theory about deja vus is that you get a deja vu about what you're doing at the same time as something momentous might be going on elsewhere in the universe, but it's like a big event. So, say there was a kind of 9/11 event, your deja vu gives you, you know, premonition as 9/11 because they were so intense, they sent their energy backwards in time through ripples in space-time. In a few more beats of your heart, you will rejoin this show. Please stay tuned. No fillets are being harmed in the making of this show. It's gone. There we go. No fillets have been harmed in the making of this show. Welcome back to Journeys with JP. Yes. Pull it out. Yeah. I did give it a little tug earlier and it didn't really work. It's an old gold tooth, and the base of the tooth that was root filled is now cracked open, and the tooth is kind of rattling around in my jaw, and creates the occasional abscess that kind of builds up underneath it. It's a long story. It's a horrible thing. It needs to be kind of basically I need to be knocked out, and they need to rip it out from my jaw, which is horrible. So I don't really want to do that. One day it will have to happen.
Well, that's part of it. I'll tell you, they have some really good toothbrushes that have an outer layer, outer ring that's longer, and a shorter inner ring, and that can get all the stuff that accumulates underneath your gum and where the tooth is that leads to those kinds of things happening. I know I've fought it before myself, and those are really good for preventing it in the future. I mean, I went from brushing my teeth occasionally to brushing my teeth two or three times so I can keep the teeth that I have left in my skull. You know what I mean? Over.
Yeah, but the trouble with this is that it's an old gold tooth, and it was, you know, I don't want to really go into hospital and have them take it away and said, that's the only bit of gold I got. You know, I'm waiting for it to come out so I can keep it and melt it down, maybe, you know?
Well, you know,
what kind of gold? Does anybody know what,
yeah, I
what
do.
Quality
I
of know. Gold is dental tooth, dental gold?
I know intimately and exactly how to tell you I would need to have the tooth, but there are a variety of alloys, and it depended on where you got it, and when you got it, because all that has changed. Did you ever hear about, you know who Lucille Ball is, the famous comedian?
Oh, yeah. We love Lucy. It was in the 1980s. Yes.
Well, Lucy got fillings in her teeth that were lead. You ready for that? So back then, you could get lead fillings. So she got these lead fillings, walked home from the dental office, and received these incredible voices without having a radio anywhere near her. She was hearing what she thought was a radio broadcast. She went in, complained to her dentist, who told I believe it was the FBI at that time, who explored and found that what she had heard was a buried, this is during World War II, a buried Japanese spy broadcast, which they dug up and found the people who were basically behind it. Isn't that interesting? Lead fillings that allowed her to hear radio broadcasts in her own head.
Yeah, and give cancer at the same time. Very good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, lead. Yeah. Oh, the Romans. Right.
One word to Herbal Floozy. Papaya leaf will remove the toxins. That's really good, but we don't have papaya here. We have some berberis.
Oh, God.
So, don't worry. I'll just suffer. Don't worry.
Hey, are you...
I think that berberi is there for a reason.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm an herbalist, and I believe what we need to heal us is usually growing right outside our door, and they really try to get our attention.
Hey, I'll tell you what's a really good plant, Feather, is comfrey. Are you familiar with comfrey?
I was just thinking about that. That would be good for us, too.
Yeah, JP, it's called Bone Mend, and it's great on your teeth. You chew up a leaf. It's a common plant, comfrey. You chew a leaf and just put a poultice against your gum, and it'll make it feel better, I guarantee you. And it does tend to restore damaged flesh, so that might help your gums.
Mm. My friend has a, he's a herbally kind of fella. He'll give me the thing. The problem is, it's not really painful. There is a bit of pain if it went in the right place, but it's kind of rattling around. It's loose. That's the problem. That's really the problem. Anyway.
Well, you know, they can put a brace on that tooth, just like they put braces on kids.
No, it's broken. It needs to be taken out.
Oh, drilled, bummer.
Drilled out. There's a bloody filling at the bottom of it. Stupid bastards. Anyway.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, when I was a kid, we had a brutal dentist. He did dental work without any anesthetic.
German, was he?
Oh, man, yes, he was. And he carved out my teeth big time when I was a kid. And as a result, I lost all of my back molars in my early, late 50s, actually, early 60s. So bad dental work has always been, you know, something that's been pretty iffy up until recently. Now I've got a couple of people that work on my teeth that are stone pros, never a problem, and I'll tell you, they saved what's left of my teeth, over.
Would be lovely. Well, I could do with some, anyway, long story. I'm not going to moan about my teeth. I'm not interested in talking about my teeth. I'm just saying that's why my voice sounds funny.
Yeah, I'll moan about your teeth for you. Man, I'll tell you, I had a
things
front
to talk about. You know,
I had a front tooth that was loose, and man, it was a nightmare for a year. Over. Go ahead, Feather.
Yeah, well, I know JP. You like to talk about the nung, your the friendly yeast.
Yep.
And I'm starting on a journey to get rid of that out of my body, too. So I'll have to let you know how that goes.
What protocols are you going to start working with?
I'm working... have you heard of the body ecology diet?
tell me more.
It's called the Body Ecology Diet, and the basic, you heard some paper because I'm looking at it. And basically, it's 80% vegetables. You can eat fats like butter and coconut, and it's only like 4 grains you can eat: millet, quinoa, amaranth, and buckwheat. You can eat fish, poultry, beef or eggs, but the most of it is really vegetables. And to get the probiotics in your body, the main thing is eating like kimchi, cultured vegetables, because that is full of probiotics. So basically, that's the start with it. So some lemon juice. Basically, it's to turn your body from acid to alkaline. That's the premise of it.
Yeah, yeah. There's many ways of doing it. Lots and lots of ways. So we've all got our own way, and that's what the nung.com is about. It's like, there are many different approaches, and I want people to talk about their approach, how they've dealt with it. Now, if you're interested, you could write an article and then write some updates and follow-ups. This is what I've discovered, and here's what's happening, and, every couple of months, if you're interested.
Yeah, definitely. I took, in the book, they have, I don't know why I have an echo, in the book they have a chat, and you ask you all kinds of questions, and so you get a score. And I can look that up for you, because that might be available online somewhere, because they didn't develop it. But I scored like a 280. Some of it could be menopause, because I do have the mood swings. I'm at that age. But I scored like way off the charts. And some of the questions they were asking are like, like mood swings and fatigue and in general. So it's really quite interesting. I could write something up like that. That would be kind of fun, actually, for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to journal your journey. That's what it's about. We all have our journeys, and some people might want to venture along the same path. And, you've already gone down there, so they should know kind of what the shape of the journey might look like. And that's really what it's about, is like, so people get an idea, prepare their minds for the journey they're about to take. And sometimes you can go through a journey in your mind, by listening to a story. For instance, you listen to a person tell a story about how they went down the shops and just turned right beside the chemist into an alleyway that never discovered before. And you go along that journey of discovery with them, and then the next day you go down the high street and say, oh yeah, there's that little thing she was talking about. And there you see the great treasure trove behind that alleyway. So everybody's journey takes them to a variant reality, and that's how it all works. We all combine our realities, and I think a group of realities is what we call a timeline. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. Definitely. That's when everything's kind of in sync. Because there's collective consciousness. I think we all have a component that we put into it. And so when we're all on the wavelength, that makes sense. That would create some type of timeline, or maybe even a vortex or something, And I have to tell you, it was something you said about the consciousness of the yeast that really, I'm like, at first I'm like, no. And then I thought about it, and I'm like, well, it wants to survive. And like anything that wants to survive, it's going to fight for survival. So that makes consciousness somehow. So I want to thank you for that, JP.
Very welcome. Ashley?
Well, I don't know if they'd have to fight to survive. Usually they don't duplicate until they have plenty of food around them and a really good liquid to live in. I have studied yeast thoroughly. I've brewed beer. I've brewed really good wine. and distilled a lot of it and made some interesting liqueurs and also some interesting oil extractions. I used to really like making liqueurs, and I couldn't easily find a lot of the extracts that I wanted to experiment with. So I think probably a healthier way of looking at yeast is that behind yeast is some of the major thinking that humans have created. The discussion of fermented beverages in itself is a major part of our culture, right?
Yeah, people talk about it, and it's got, there's lots of different consciousnesses of yeast, aren't there? There's different varieties, aren't there?
Yeah, there's
all kinds.
But what has really taken over is the unhealthy yeast. It's gotten out, well, it's out of balance, basically.
I believe.
That the toxicity of most of our diets nowadays is full of one kind of sugar, which this yeast just totally feeds on.
Yeah.
And I don't think even most people realize it unless they have some kind of health crisis or some outward signs, because it's kind of, in some ways, it's very hidden. And I think that's what's causing a lot of the diseases nowadays. It makes sense to me because, you know, it's thriving in the environment, and like in this book, and then it's like the inner world reflects the outer world, and look how chaotic and kind of these main growths that are out in our outward environment is the same what's going on in a lot of us in our own inner environment.
Absolutely. As above, so below. It's a fractal omniverse. So yeah, here's the thing. My personal pet theory is that the particular variety of yeast that was used in Egypt that was given to these humans by Ra, whoever he might be, or Marduk, whoever he might be, was almost like a weaponized form of yeast, and that it's possible to tune into this stuff and perhaps even create cravings or things like that. Imagine you've all got this kind of thing sort of hanging around inside you that is jacked into your nervous system. What if there was a big note, a football game, for instance, and they played this big note on the loudspeakers, which activated your nung that says beer, you know, because basically the consciousness of the nung is Homer Simpson, you know, beer, that inner voice, that's the nung speaking, that's his inner nung speaking, beer, pizza, you know, all this stuff. That's the consciousness of the nung. And it can be manipulated, and I believe it is being manipulated by the same empire that gave us the stuff in the first place. And what was very interesting, and I just want to bring this one up, is that every year the Hebrews do a thing known as Pesach, or Passover, in which they do a yeast fast. They stop eating yeast products for a week. I would recommend it, even if you're not Jewish.
Well,
and it's good in springtime to do that.
Would you like to know the secret of yeast? It's a little bit disturbing, but I'll be glad to tell you about it.
We love the disturbance stuff, because it makes sense. Okay, so in your experience with yeast, SJ, what's the deal?
Well, this was passed on by a lot of people, but you've got to get really into it before you start looking at the kind of things where they're discussing it. But the nature of yeast is this. It takes a proper must, whatever you want to call it, a mixture of food and water for it to begin to multiply. and it multiplies, and what it gives off is alcohol. And it continues to multiply until it finally drowns in its own excrement, which we call alcohol. Now, the secret is that humanity can control itself, but yeast can't. But like yeast, humanity can drown itself in its own excrementa, or pollution as you would call it nowadays. And that's the secret. That's the message. That message is so that you can know the fate of unregulated growth. And we have the ability to regulate growth. That's what we were talking about when the program first started, right? The ability to think and create a reality. First comes the idea, then comes the reality, right? Science fiction in the 30s, reality in 2016. Over.
Well, science fiction in the 1800s and reality in 1944 or earlier. But yes, indeed. So that's fascinating. That it's got what's the word?
Permutations.
Yeah, no, it's what's the word? I'm trying to find the word. It's white like a com word. It's there is a similarity in the pattern of human growth and yeast growth, biological growth in general, yep. That follows a fractal pattern, doesn't it?
Is that what you were looking for? Congruency.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Well, it's similar in the fact that you can learn from everything around you in the natural world is how we learn, right? Let's take it back to a primitive pre-mind, pre-intellect, where this little critter with a backbone that's just figuring out how to go from water to land. It's our reality that really teaches us. It's how we evolve. And there's a lot of people who are theoretically thinking that our evolution wasn't just the result of nature, but that beings, entities, living things can direct their evolution. Isn't that interesting? So it isn't quite as random and chaotic as we think. Maybe it's because we evolved, possibly because we wanted to be evolved.
All right.
Isn't that
Here's
an interesting
thing. Well,
idea?
From my perspective,
yep.
Humanity didn't evolve on Earth. Not in the way that we've been, you know, Darwinianly. We didn't evolve Darwinianly. We didn't get created by some magical figure either. You know, both of those are myths. The reality is much more complex from what I understand, in that there were some beings. Now, this sounds like a really weird trip, but it was recorded by a very very tiny little woman who spoke from Romania or somewhere. Anyway, in the Bodh Gaya area of India, something like 500 million years ago, a large UFO kind of landed for repairs because it had been caught by the gravity well of this planet. And it had a... tell me if you've heard this one. It had... 12th dimensional beings who were just kind of coming back from some other mission, and they got caught in the gravity well of the Earth and landed on Earth because it was an automated ship. The ship had its own kind of AI consciousness, but couldn't take off again and never did. But the beings who came off the ramp of this vehicle were highly traumatized because of the drop in dimensions from 12 dimensions all the way down to third, which means basically there were like, you know, like light-bodied beings, and they suddenly became very dense, and they ended up as like dwarves. So, like, imagine they would maybe started off like 12 feet tall of ethereal stuff, but as soon as they hit the ground, they landed on the third dimension, and they became just like a kind of squat little being. And obviously, if your chakras are up in your 12th dimension, they're up in your head, they're 10 feet higher in the ground, in the air. So basically, these beings were removed from their connection with their chakras. They weren't coincident anymore. The chakra was like 10 feet above them. And that left a very damaged and traumatized being that had kind of manifested out of this mess. And that's the story of the original human being type beings that started out and then started re-evolving on this planet. And that's when the other races, like what we call the reptilians or the Anunnakis and all these others, there's 22 other races who have taken this kind of proto-blob being and, you know, just tweaked it a bit and thought, oh yeah, this could be used actually. This is could be quite useful. This is a being that could actually travel the dimensions. But it's, these beings are still, they've still been traumatized. They haven't recovered from the trauma. So there's a vast amount of pain, trauma, and lack of memory of how we got here, because we're not connected anymore. Anyway, so that's the story of how the original human bodies sort of arrived on Earth, and then after that, you know, they were effed about with by all sorts of people thinking, oh, we could use this stuff, this blobby DNA stuff, and they added a bit of bird, and they added a bit of lion, and a bit of this, and a bit of that, until we get the human of today. And that's very different from the God creation story, and also very different from the Darwinian evolutionary random lightning crack evolutionary primordial soup story as well. So, over, what do you think?
Well, my favorite version of that story was a science fiction story from the late 50s that talked about these people landing to fix their spacecraft, fixing it, sitting down and taking a break, drinking a beer, and leaving the beer on the planet Earth as they took off. You know, so I always thought that was an interesting version of...
Well, isn't that a combination of everything we've been talking about today?
Well, you would have...
Isn't that
true? You would have a yeast cell, but you would also have any organisms from the saliva of the being that left the beer can sitting on the parking lot, right? Planet Earth, basically. I always thought it was a great story, and it sort of cheered me up because I figure if you look at every creation mythos that we have, including the somewhat unusual ones, you'd probably be closer to the truth than just taking one of them. You know, I've always suspected that that was probably the nitty-gritty of it all. We tend to look for just one cause when nature tells us that there's 100 causes for things, and they're all interrelated. In fact, knowing that everything is connected is probably one of the major steps to becoming a shaman, a philosopher, a deep thinker, is realizing that if you look for it, you can always find that interconnection, right? Feather, are you hip to that revealed interconnection between you and all these things you never thought you were connected to? Over.
Oh, absolutely. And journeys in my life and people I have met, and I've always felt like we are of the earth, but we are also of the stars. We are stardust.
Okay. I was going to talk about, pardon me, can I interrupt you for a second?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Well, earlier, Star was talking about things, and he mentioned us changing and evolving. Certainly that would be indicated by after 2012, the Mayans basically give us a chance to continue another cycle without forcing us to be one thing or the other. And what I was thinking about was that, I've sort of lost my train of thought here. It'll be really interesting if I can drag it back out again.
Well, could I interject here?
Yeah,
go ahead, Lyra.
In my journey, in my life, I myself believe that we are a mixture of Earth and the stars, that we're not just one thing. And sorry for the background noise. I spent some time with tribes from the America, just people. And one guy always spoke about bringing back our memories and that we are from different tribes of the stars, that we all come from different tribes. And so that is why sometimes...
Did he say, Feather, how many?
I don't remember exactly. I know there was at least a dozen. And then there was a professor an elderly professor I helped out at one time, and he always thought he said, oh, we definitely came from the stars. And I always feel that because we are made up, if you really look at the components of our bodies, we are made up the Earth, but we have that other component, and we're always looking for the stars. We're always fascinated by the stars. I think we're always fascinated by what is beyond our realm of Earth. We always seem to be drawn to it in one way or another. And so, I think we are definitely a mixture of different races, and not just, you know, I think we are part of something that was on the Earth, but we are melded between different species.
Well, without a nova star basically exploding into all of its component atoms, human beings would not be able to exist. We needed the atoms from a explosion like that of a star in order to exist, because we are literally stardust. It's the only place where the kind of molecules, the atoms that we need to make the molecules that we are, exist, is in the heart of a star. Isn't that a hoot?
Well, you know, I've got the feeling that stars and things like that are not what we have been told is either. You know, I don't believe in the fusion bomb idea.
Also, wasn't there something said about plankton that we find in the oceans? We're on the outside of the International Space Station. That was reported somewhere.
Yeah, well, the idea that space is actually a vacuum might not be actually correct. It might be more of a ocean.
Yep.
Just more widely divided. So, yes, there might be plankton and krill and whales and octopuses and space goats that go around by farting. You never know.
I'll tell you, back in the 70s, there was an article that showed up in one of the science fiction monthly magazines of what kind of different beings would exist if they weren't carbon-based. So you start thinking in terms of all the other things that could be used for beings with consciousness, and you've got every possible kind of being that you could think of. Beings made of gas, beings made of vegetable fiber, beings made of things that we don't even think of in terms of function and existence. And they drew pictures of them. And I'll tell you, those images are still in my mind. They pop up whenever I think about it. It was that much of an impression. So it isn't just carbon-based life forms that are potential in this universe. And what I was going to tell you, Feather, is that he was talking about beings being able to change their reality. And there is something called the Gaia mythos, the Gaia...
I mean Gaia.
Pardon me?
Gaia?
Yeah, Gaia. But also there's another goddess associated with her, and I'm trying to remember
Sophia.
It. Yes, the Gaia Sophia mythos. So you and I, JP, have actually explored that area. Now, the time I went in and talked to a bunch of people who were exploring the concepts within that idea, they were talking about Gaia as an entity that can move itself when it desires. And they were talking about Gaia's original creation closer to the center of the galaxy, and Gaia, the Earth, moving itself to where it is now, currently in orbit around the Sun. Very interesting thinking involved with this theory, with this belief structure, based on early pre-Gnostic discussions of Gaia, the Gaia Sophia mythos. You want to comment there, JP? It's pretty interesting. Opening.
Well, yeah, I've spent a long time listening to as much as I can of John Lamb Lash, who is very stuttery and very difficult to listen to.
I know who you're talking about.
And, you know, he eventually is getting more and more fluent about it, but it's difficult to get the answer across. You know, he speaks very stuttery. Anyway, so here's a story. Sophia was an aeon. An aeon is a being who lives in the Pleroma. The Pleroma is the high-dimensional gaseous existence that exists at the center of the galaxy in and beyond the Dark Rift. Whatever it is, they are in the middle, and they look out to the spiral arms to see their creations, a bit like a gardener. Imagine like you've got you're on an island, you've got on a desert island, and somehow there's a bunch of bottles that have arrived, so you've got your bottles, and you notice that the current flow takes the current away from the island, so you never know where it's going to go. But you might take a little bottle, and you could put a little plant in there, and make a tiny little village in a bottle, and then chuck it in the sea, and it goes out and it goes out and it goes out. And by the time, you know, a couple of years goes by, you know, you put one of these out every day, one of them may have blossomed into quite a very, you know, viable ecosystem, and it hits another island and then starts populating the island. That's the sort of thing that's going on.
I would think so. Possibility, certainly.
That's what the aeons are doing. They're serpentine beings, it appears, not humanoid.
Speaking of which, have you ever studied the traditions of serpentine mythos on this planet? You ever tumble onto that?
I'm inundated by my serious other who claims she's a dragon, so what can I say?
Right on.
So yeah. Okay, so there's a line of, all right, so also in amongst these humanoids there are the survivors, so they say, apparently. I read this interview many years ago, I think in Nexus magazine, And it was an interview with a Earth reptilian. Not a Draco reptilian, but an Earth reptilian. Imagine 65 million years ago, everything, you know, there was some disaster. I don't know what happened. You know, maybe a big chunk of Maldek came and smashed into the Earth, and great big tidal wave, 200 feet high, wiped everybody out. Apart from 10...
More likely 2,000 feet high.
Apart from two geckos, right?
Right.
Right? And these geckos, they eventually evolve into a humanoid, because that's the nature of the galaxy, somehow. So they say. Well, that's what Wilcox says, but he might be a shill. Anyway, so he evolved... These beings evolve into, you know, the humanoid type, two arms, two legs, you know, head, business... But an Earth, a reptile, and that these beings have been living underground and, you know, keeping away from the very harsh sunlight and stuff like that, perhaps only coming out at night where it's cooler and not so difficult. And since they've been living underground, they can see in the dark and infrared and things like that. These are the beings that were represented in the third episode of the latest X-Files series.
Mm-hmm.
Who were jokingly crossed with a werewolf. They made it a comedy, but the important thing is that this guy, who turns out to be one of these Earth Dracos, says, I've been hibernating now for how long? How did it convert 2365 days over 10,000 years? He's been hibernating. Something woke him up. Anyhow, I can't remember what that was. It was an important event. It woke him up. But it's very interesting that, you know, we've got these Earth reptilians that inhabit the Earth with us, are conscious like us, are evolving alongside us, but we don't know about them, and we'd probably kill them, we'd probably eat them, they'd probably taste like chicken. Over.
I'm glad I don't like chicken anymore.
Well, you know, there's always that question, which came first?
The chicken or the egg?
Yeah, the answer is the rooster.
What
usually
about the
does. He's a, you know, I've got a rooster. He's called Roger.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a big red, what is it, Rhode Island. Big.
Aww.
Big fellow.
No,
great
good
big,
for her.
Great big. He's stupid. He's mean, and he's a perv. You know, like, he's like Benny Hill. Every morning, I open the door to the rooster, and the greys come dashing out, right? It's like, gotta get away from this guy. And then the red, who's his kind of girlfriend, she comes out, and then finally, Mr. Grand Rooster comes out. Hello, hello, hello. And then the first thing he does is to chase the red, like a dirty old man going, oh, come here, love, with the red, and she's all like, oh, leave me alone, and then, you know, the other two are having some breakfast, and they're all, oh, go on, and he, like, jumps on them. I don't think he actually ever gets it. He's not a very good boyfriend. He's not a relationship role model, the rooster, let me put it that way, particularly mine. I don't think he's actually making it with the girls either. Yeah, I'm getting no viable eggs here. Yeah, we've got three girls and one rooster and nothing's going on. But anyway.
Well, that could be a lot of things, right?
Well, that stopped all the conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Why doesn't my rooster...
I was going to say something, too, and I had a rooster, and he had a Rhode Island red, and he was huge and mean, and he had spikes on him that must have been, like, 5 inches long. And he didn't like it when you came in to see your hands, his hands. He would attack your legs, you know, and I ended up ended up getting rid of him, and I think finally he got ate by a wild animal or something.
Oh, the food chain, eh? Here's my solution. I chase the bug around, right? I sort of knock him over, roll him over, and then grab his legs and lift him up by his legs. And he suddenly soon realizes that he can't do anything, and so he kind of relaxes, and then you stroke his belly. I think you stroke it upwards or down, whichever way it is.
Feather-wise,
yeah. So, and eventually they stiffen up, and you can lay them on the ground like a board, boom, and they don't move for 10 or 15 minutes. That's what I call mastering him, because he needs to know who's bigger in the pecking order, and anybody who can pick a being up and knock them out, you know, master them. But the funniest thing is, after I've done that, I only have to do it like every couple of months just to kind of keep him in line. After he does that, he goes around the garden and he's like, oh, oh, ow. He's like a teenager who's been prevented from watching his favorite TV show. It's just crazy. It's this, oh, oh, sound.
Poor guy.
Put in his place.
And about the reptilians, my thought is, like, don't they say we have a reptilian brain, part of our brain? But The thing that people don't think about, our skin, if you look at it under a microscope, looks like snake skin. And we shed. We just are not totally aware of that we're shedding our skin all the time. So what if one of the tribes we are made up of is a type of reptilian tribe?
Well, apparently the reptilians insisted that they, you know, they were part of our stream, and made it so that the most basic part of us, our survival instincts, were the reptilian parts of us. So that's how the reptilians terraform and make the environment more conducive for them, more congenial for them, because it's they're used to that state of, you know, semi-alarm all the time. That's the energy that they like to sit on. And that's what that's what we call a low vibration, because it is very low frequency.
Want to hear something interesting? There's this lady named Bonnie that does extensive mine and cave exploration. And she has gone down some of the most incredible places in the world. And she was in South America, was down in this one cave, when they discovered the tracks of a lizard that was walking on its rear feet. And it stood up for a second and went down on its four paws, but consistently walked on its rear legs. So that's pretty interesting to encounter a mile or so underneath the surface of the mountain that you're exploring the caves within. So it certainly is evident, at least in the science that we now have, that a portion of our DNA is closely linked to our lizard progenitors, but not every aspect. We certainly have many layers of other evolutions or changes to our DNA that we can examine, right?
Yeah, I think we've got a lot of the DNA of that race that I was saying, you know, this high dimensional race. And when people talk about the 12 strands of DNA, we're putting it all together. There is a picture growing that all the 12s have a relationship. You know, the 12 of the zodiac, the 12 of the year, obviously, the 12 of the 12 strands of DNA, the six bodies, each with two strands. So you got physical, etheric, emotional, and mental. That's the lower three. And then you've got the soul, the personality, the low soul, the soul and the monad, the high soul, and so that's six, each one with two pairs. And when they all meet, when you all get them to sit and phase, because they're a spiral. What does it mean when the spirals are in phase? It means that they all fit together, like a plait, like a, what would you call them, a braid. That they all work together in a beautiful braid, and they're on a higher dimension. Each one is on a different octave.
Well, one of the things you got to keep in mind is that before we get to the lizard stage of our development as a child, we actually are we have a precursor even more primitive than the lizard, which is a fish. So think about that in terms of everything related to lizard behavior, lizard aspects of our bodies, our personalities. We've got that fish in there too that preceded the lizard. So think about that sometimes in terms of our need for water. Over.
Well, and there's another thing that I think about a lot. You know, we're kind of the sea turned inside out, aren't we?
Right.
If you turned a fish inside out, you could get a person. Couldn't you?
Yep.
Because we hold the sea inside us, instead of the fish, which is inside the sea.
Exactly. I'll tell you, one of the things people don't realize is all it takes is 2 or 3 degrees of temperature change in our oceans for the kind of life that we're familiar with to cease to exist. Literally. I suspect that we'll always maintain some existence unless we actually burn this planet up, which is a possibility, you know. In fact, not us so much as the sun itself. I often wonder how much of Gaia's mind is involved with pest control. And I wonder how close the communication of Gaia and the sun is.
Over. Pests are the result of worries in the mind of Gaia. Or Gaia.
Possibly.
Or Sophia. Or our... What, yeah, I call it planet Earth mind. After Frank Jordan, he calls it Earth mind. So imagine all the little nasty little sacrifices and ceremonies that have been made create little worries in the mind of our planet, and they manifest as biting insects and nasty things.
Possibility.
That's another possibility, isn't it?
Sure is. You know, and assuming anthropomorphizing Gaia and assuming that she's like us, with our kind of behaviors and rationales for action, might also be a mistake. You know, Gaia might be significantly different from humanity while still being linked to it. I often wander in that particular thought, because I often wonder, you know, how accurate is our appraisal of the entities around us. How much do we get and how much are we totally unaware of?
You know, 90% of them.
Maybe not.
Heather.
Yeah, to me, isn't she her own type of species, her own type of being? So, you know, there are probably things like we inhabit the same space, so to speak.
Right.
We inhabit the same solar system, so that we, and actually we're more inside Gaia than outside, so we're actually inside her, because we're inside her atmosphere and everything. So she is her own entity, her own being, and my thought. And another thought was about different species on the planet. We're very, all vertebrates have something in common too, like the horse, the giraffe, we all have the same number of vertebrae. They're, you know, very similar in the neck. They're just different sizes. So that's something else to think about.
I'll tell you, I'm always fascinated by the fact that men don't have the same amount of stuff as women. We're missing what, the X chromosome or the Y chromosome? One of them, right?
One leg of the X chops off and becomes a Y. That's it.
That's right. So, I mean, that's pretty interesting. Why does that situation exist?
As Robert Morningsky says, we are all males, simply modified female. And that the natural form of the galaxy, of the universe, is feminine. How about that for your patriarchal, white male supremacist concept?
Well, I'll be sure to mimeograph a bulletin for the Council of Nicaea when I next see him.
For sure. So, Feather, any final feelings?
Thank you so much. I did not expect to sit in so long, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. I appreciate all the work you do for Wolf Spirit and also for Rev Radio, and thank you very much. It was a very intriguing conversation.
Thank you very much. I am open to donations, as is the station. There's lots of station donations you can give to but my personal one is Ever Beyond Radio, if you want to come to everbeyondradio.com. I've got stuff, some Sungite stuff, some crystal stuff, and also do readings and analyze voices and kind of things like that. So if you're interested, come along to everbeyondradio.com. wolfspiritradio.com/listen. Have a listen in. We're going to have Sam Muggsy next. We'll be joining Colleen Kelly later on this evening. After all the repeats, we'll be going over to Haggy Shack Radio. So thank you very much, everybody. This was Journeys with JP, with SJ. Say goodnight, SJ.
Well, thank you both. It was a pleasure talking with both of you.
And with Wild Feather. Say goodnight, Wild Feather.
Good night, JP and SJ.
Night, Feather.
There you go. Use the name. The legal name is a fraud. Use whatever you like. Well, use what people call you. Use your baby name. Whatever it is, it's you. Now, there we are. Finally, we've arrived at the other shore. Thank you very much, everybody. Good night, and I'll see you on Thursday when I'm producing Sean David Moon. Good night.